Would you tell us your name, please, sir?
Russ Gibb.
And where do you live, Mr. Gibbs?
Detroit, Michigan.
And what is your occupation?
I'm a disc jockey on an underground radio station called WKNR-FM.
Calling your attention to the 12th day of October of this year, 1969, Mr. Gibbs, in the afternoon, were you on duty and on the air?
Yes, sir.
And did you receive a phone call from a listener about Paul McCartney, the Beatles singer?
Yes, sir, I did.
I draw your attention now to this reel of tape before me on the recorder and ask you if you can identify it.
It looks like the tape that was taken off our log. We have to log all programming.
Does it reproduce the conversation about McCartney?
Yes, sir.
Well, it's WKNR-FM. Uncle Rusty. And who do we have here? What's your name?
Oh, it's Tom on the line.
Yeah, hello, Tom. What's going on?
Oh, well, I go to school.
Have you got your radio on?
Yeah, something.
Well, turn it off, man, because you're going to get feedback.
I was going to rant with you about McCartney being dead, and what is this all about?
Let's do it again.
I got Eastern Michigan.
Eastern Michigan, and you heard that McCartney was dead.
I read the news today, oh boy.
The witness, Mr. Gibbs, has made a suggestion of death, the death of this man, Paul McCartney. And others think that they may have some clues that Mr. McCartney is in fact dead, has been for some time, and that his associates, the Beatles, are constantly trying to inform us of that fact. On the other hand, those who claim to be close to the Beatles say there's nothing at all to it, that Paul is very much alive and nobody ever tried to suggest anything. We'll hear from those witnesses and hear what they have to say. There is no judge in this case because you're the judge. So hop into the chair, listen to the evidence, and decide whether Paul McCartney is dead, and if he is not dead, whether somebody is trying to persuade us that he is, and if so, for what reason. Mr. Gibbs, as a result of the suggestion of your listener that Paul McCartney was dead, what, if anything, did you do?
Well, the youngster said, would you play one cut for me on the air forward? And he said, take the album Revolution, and what we call the White Album, play a cut called Revolution Number 9, and play it forward. And as you do so, the guy comes on and says, Number 9, Number 9, Number 9. He repeats it, and at that point, the kid said, now, play that backwards. And I played it backwards, and man, I freaked. I went crazy because of the fact it says, turn me on, dead man. Well, I just flipped out.
Is that the album?
Yes, sir.
I want you to listen now and tell us whether or not this is what you heard when you reversed the recording.
Number 9, number 9, number 9. Number 9, number 9, number 9, number 9, number 9, number 9. Hang
That's it.
Very well. What other examples, if any, did you find of curious doings on these albums and recordings?
Well, at that point, the switchboard at the station started to light up like crazy, and kids started to call in, but I still had this fellow on the air, and he said, will you play one other thing? And he said, play this one forward. And he said, get the Magical Mystery Tour album, which actually predated the White Album.
Is this that album?
Yes, sir.
All right. This is what, with reference to that album, did you do?
Well, I got out Strawberry Fields, which is a cut on here. And right at the very end, he said, play it. And he said, see if you can hear something in there. And so I play the album forward, and you hear very distinctly at the end someone saying, I buried Paul.
Is that forwards or in reverse?
That's forward, sir.
All right. Will you listen now and tell us if this is what you heard at the end of Strawberry Fields?
Now, if you'd lifted some of the tracks and filtered out some of the noise, that would be clearer. However, it says, I buried Paul.
Let's hear that once again.
Some people think that saying, I'm very bored, but a lot of people have told me that they hear, I buried Paul.
Have you found any other oddities? Or...
Oh, wow.
Well, give us a list of some.
Hundreds of them, literally, when you get into it. The other one that really freaked me out was he had a light pole, and it's from Revolution number 9 again, right at the end. Now, this is forward, but buried under about 6 tracks of noise and music.
Can you explain to us briefly what you mean when you say buried under tracks?
Well, they have recording techniques where they record. If you could visualize 8 tape recorders lined up in a row, each recording various parts of songs or various instruments, and then on the finished product, when they make an album, they glue them all together and it's just one tape. If you knock off some of the other tracks, you'll find buried in the end. And I use the word buried again because, man, as you get into it, you'll go crazy. So there's a whole reference to an automobile accident, and that's forward. It's just buried under a bunch of noise.
Will you listen now and see whether or not this is what you heard when you lifted the 6 tracks?
Okay. They've clipped off part of the thing that should have been in there about the shoulder blades, which goes on after the noise. In other words, there's even more comment about some type of accident that took place. And that reoccurs, by the way.
Have you found any other examples beyond the ones you've described?
Oh, yes, sir. Again, in the White Album, you get into a very strange thing. It's in between So Tired and Blackbird. There's a mumble that comes out, and it says, Paul is a dead man. Miss him. And that's forward, but it's mumbled. It's sort of nonsense. You have to really get into it to hear it. But then if you play that backwards, it says, Paul is a dead man. Miss him. And it's very clear that way.
May we hear it now, then, and see whether or not you recognize it as what you heard when you uncovered it.
Yes, sir. That's a four. Paul is a dead man. Miss him, miss him, miss him.
Very well. And any others?
No, those are the main ones that we found. You can go on for hours, literally, digging them up as you go through. You have one in Your Mother Should Know, where you have something that sounds like a piano and organ together, but you play it backwards, and it sounds like a funeral thing from Bach with an organ. And it had to be done purposely. In other words, somebody was messing around. And
do I take it correctly, Mr. Gibbs, that you had played these records before without having noticed these somewhat strange features until they were called to your attention?
Yes, sir. Because, frankly, there are some obscenities and there's some things that, had our station management known they were on the records forward, we never had a chance to get them on the air.
Very well.
They're all there.
Thank you. May we have your name, sir?
My name is Doc Siegel.
And what is your occupation?
I'm a recording engineer for Gold Star Studios in Hollywood.
Mr. Siegel, have you heard the recordings that we just played through the other witness?
Oh, yes.
And have you sufficient technical experience to give us any opinion as to the likelihood that these could have been accidentally implanted?
Well, I think that my experience is quite extensive, both in recording and TV fields, audio-wise. And it's my considered opinion that they could not have been accidental.
Can you tell us a little bit about how these recordings were made and what would be necessary to produce this effect?
I think, first of all, what we have to develop is the method that's used in recording stereo. In stereo recording, we use 2 separate tracks, one for the left side, one for the right side. A combination of the 2 tracks makes the center channel. And in listening to these recordings, in many cases, we hear that on one side we have one piece of information, on the other track we have another piece of information. And It seems to me, especially in, trying to recall a specific instance, well, of course, there's also a piece that's put in backwards. The piece with the organ had to be turned around. It was played backwards. So the tape was cut out, turned backwards, put back in. That piece definitely had some editing done. And in the part where you have the two different voices saying two different things, one track would have one piece of information, the other track the other. So you would hear both at the same time. And if you listen carefully, you'll hear that the music is playing forward even though the tape is running backward.
Mr. Siegel, based on your experience, do you think it likely or even possible that these could be just sounds which, through coincidence, seem to reflect a tragic event or a death?
I would say offhand that it is possible for perhaps one or two to be accidental. But in the majority, no. I think that they actually were planted.
Have you ever, in your experience, uncovered accidental implantations like this in recordings?
Accidental? No. Never.
Thank you very much. May we have your name, sir?
My name is Fred LeBourne.
And where do you live?
Ann Arbor, Michigan.
What is your occupation, please?
I'm a student there at the university.
Are you the same Fred LeBourne who published on October 14th, 1969, an article in the Michigan Daily, a newspaper published by the university, which begins as follows? Paul McCartney was killed in an automobile accident in early November 1966 after leaving EMI recording studios tired, sad, and dejected.
Right, I wrote that story.
Do you know for a fact that that's true?
No, I don't.
Why did you publish it?
Well, I was supposed to... They asked me to review Abbey Road, which was the current Beatle album. So I decided I didn't want to just write a review about, you know, this is Paul does this song and George does this song, et cetera, like all reviews go. So I decided to make it work symbolically on a religious level. So, and also there were a lot of rumors going around that Paul was dead, so... You know, I just started putting all those clues together.
Well, now you speak of clues. From where are your clues derived? From the albums themselves?
From the album, the covers and the songs themselves.
All right, you mentioned Abbey Road. I hand you a copy of the album published by the Beatles called Abbey Road and ask you to explain what it was there that made you suspect that Paul was in fact dead.
Well, there's John. The four Beatles are crossing a street called Abbey Road, and they are leaving what appears to be a cemetery. On the left-hand side of the album cover. The first Beatle, John Lennon, is dressed in white and with long hair, looks either like a doctor or a minister or even a Christ-like figure, a God-like figure. The next man walking across the street is Ringo, who's dressed as an undertaker. The next man is Paul, who's wearing an outdated suit. He's barefoot, which is would suggest a corpse, would suggest his symbolizing a
corpse.
It is
the fact that people are buried in England without their shoes.
That's true. That's so I understand,
and
yeah.
The fourth figure?
And George Harrison has is wearing denim clothes like he's a grave digger.
What significance, if any, do you attach to the parked Volkswagen with a registration plate on the back?
Well, the license plate says 28 if, and if Paul McCartney were alive today, he would be in his 28th year of existence.
In other words, he would be 27 looking toward his 28th
That's
birthday.
Correct. That's correct.
I ask you to reverse the album and tell me whether or not you find anything on the rear of the album that to you is suspicious or appears to be deliberate.
Well, there are three dots in the wall up near the top that appear, if a line was drawn between them, it appears to make the number three, so it would read three Beatles.
Would you connect them up as you suggest?
Three Beatles.
And you say that that was intended to be a message that there are now alive only three Beatles?
Oh, I don't know if it was intended to be that at all.
But it's evidence that you find persuasive to
Yeah, it's a coincidence and a series of hundreds of coincidences in the albums.
I'll hand you another album that has been published by the Beatles, I think less than a year ago, called Magical Mystery Tour, and ask you whether there is anything about it that you think backs up your position.
Yeah, there are a lot of clues. On the cover, there the four Beatles are dressed up in animal costumes with masks on, and it's said that the front Beatle is Paul, dressed as a walrus in black in a crucifixion figure. In crucifixion pose with his arms out like this. Now, there's a lot of speculation that the walrus is a symbol of death in Roman mythology, in Dutch mythology, in Eskimoan mythology. So that would be significant.
Have you found anything in the lyrics in any of the songs published by the Beatles that might reflect upon the walrus configuration? You know, of course, that it is claimed that John Lennon is wearing the walrus.
That's true. But I mean, he says, of course, there's the song, I'm the Walrus. mm-hmm. which Lennon sings and Lennon wrote. But in the inserts inside the album here, in the picture book sort of thing, it says, "I am the walrus." "No, you're not," said little Nicola. And then when the Beatles album came out, the White Christmas album a year ago, there's a song in it called Glass Onion, in which John says, "And here's another clue for you all, the walrus was Paul."
And you think that is John Lennon disclosing the fact that Paul is in fact dead and that's why he's the walrus?
Well, it's John Lennon just saying the walrus is Paul. I don't know, you know, exactly what he was trying to do.
Is there anything else in specific lyrics that you think forms a part of this entire pattern?
Yeah, in Sgt. Pepper. Excuse me. In Sgt. Pepper, which is, if the theory is true, that Paul was killed in November 1966, it was the first album made without him, so it would obviously have references to the fact that he had been killed. And the most obvious references are in A Day in the Life, where the lyrics say, "I read the news today about him. He blew his mind out in a car. He didn't notice that the lights had changed."
And the suspicion is that he was in fact killed in an automobile accident.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Right?
You're examining now the rear of the album, Sgt. Pepper's.
That's right. There are four Beatles on the back, and one's back is facing us. The others are facing us face on. One's back is turned. That's Paul.
All right. And on the front of the album, do you find anything significant as to the configuration in which Paul McCartney is?
Well, the whole album is really reeks with death symbols. I mean, there's a grave on the front, which they have acknowledged to be some sort of a grave. Down in the lower right-hand corner is a group of flowers in the shape of a bass guitar, left-handed bass guitar, which, if looked at in a certain way, you know, also spell out Paul, ?
Why is left-handed significant as to the
Paul's
bass guitar?
Paul's left-handed.
Is he the only left-handed Beatle?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. What about this apparent hand that is hanging over his
head? Yeah, that's a symbol that seems to recur a lot in a lot of the albums. Not only the fact that there's a hand that seems to be sort of omnipresent over Paul's head, but he's also barefoot in a lot of the pictures that were taken.
Have you discovered any mythological or historical significance in your studies about the appearance of a hand over somebody's head?
It supposedly indicates the presence of evil, singling one person out for the presence of evil.
I noticed that in the photographs on the inside of this album, all of the Beatles appear in some sort of costume, but a sleeve patch on the left arm of Paul McCartney, whom you say is left-handed, has the initials OPD on it. Have you found any significance to those initials?
Yeah, in England, that's supposed to be, it's the equivalent of our DOA, dead on arrival, and it means officially pronounced dead.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've made reference to other pictures of the Beatles where only Paul McCartney is without shoes, which you interpret to some extent as a suggestion of death. Where have you found those?
Well, on the cover of Abbey Road, most obviously, but in the pictures that came with the Magical Mystery Tour album, there are two instances. Let me find them here. One where they're all standing and they have their hands up, and there's a hand behind Paul's head, of course, next to a white piano. He's barefoot on page 10. And on page 13, he's standing barefoot with his shoes over next to the drums.
Is there anything unusual about the shoes that you can see?
It appears as though they're red stained.
Would you examine this photograph of the four Beatles dressed in white, each with a flower, and tell me if there's anything unusual that you found about it?
Yeah, Paul is wearing a black rose, and the other Beatles are wearing red roses.
And what significance do you attach to that?
Black rose obviously symbolizes death.
Thank you. Sir, may we have your name?
Paul Cannon.
And what is your occupation?
I'm the program director of radio station WKNR.
And is that the same radio station that the former witness, Mr. Gibbs, is employed by?
Yes, it is.
Have you had occasion since the broadcast, which we described on October 12, 1969, to receive any phone calls about the McCartney incident?
Yes, many phone calls. We've made many phone calls ourselves, too, called extensively to England.
Have you received any from people purporting to be connected with the Beatles?
We did on October the 22nd. We received a phone call in the morning about 10 o'clock, our time, from a man who said he was Paul McCartney.
And what did he have to say?
Quite a bit. Talked for about 25 minutes,
as a matter of fact. Had he learned of your broadcast?
Yes, as a matter of fact, that's why he called, because he was aware that the story had begun on our radio station.
And what did he claim? That the whole thing was a lie or a hoax? Or what
well,
did
we
say?
Asked him, of course. We were interested in the symbolism, if there was any, and why they had done certain things. And he said that there was no symbolism, nothing intended. It was very spontaneous.
Denied it all?
Yes, he did.
I'll show you these notes and ask you whether or not these are a verbatim recreation of a part of that conversation between you and Paul McCartney.
Yes, they are.
Would you read, please, his statement to you?
Okay, Paul McCartney says, "It's whatever anyone reads into it is what it is. It's, you know, just because you create the sensationalism, Why should you make anything of it by broadcasting it? It was your station that created this sensationalism and all that, and he said, rubbish. Well, it was you that did it originally. You did it initially. You made the initial broadcast. And our response was, no, we broadcast what some fans had said. And he said, no, you gave the initial broadcast, which started it, and fed it with phone calls about me and letters about it. It's just one big drag having to deny it, and I wish you'd stop.
So the man who said he was Paul McCartney places blame for the entire story with you.
Yes, that's true.
I noticed that it's been covered by both Life and Time magazine, and that in Life magazine, a statement was obtained from Paul himself, which reflects upon some of the claims made by Mr. Labor. I wonder if you'd read the first paragraph of that statement aloud.
Says, it's all bloody stupid. I picked up that OPD badge in Canada. It was a police badge. Perhaps it means Ontario Police Department or something. And he says, I was wearing a black flower because they ran out of red ones. It is John, not me, dressed in black on the cover and in the inside of Magical Mystery Tour. On Abbey Road, we were wearing our ordinary clothes. I was just walking barefoot because it was a hot day. The Volkswagen just happened to be parked there.
Coincidence all. You talked with the man who said he was Paul McCartney for 25 minutes.
That's true.
And did he claim to you that they just happened to have a black flower when they ran out of red ones?
We weren't that specific.
Did he claim to you that this was an Ontario Police Department badge that just happened to be sewn under that uniform?
No, we didn't mention that specifically either.
Did he explain away any of these clues that are being talked about across the country suggesting his death?
No, as I said before, we asked a number of times what symbolism is there, and he said there's none whatsoever. He says, matter of fact, we just make 50 minutes of music on an album, and we don't try to say anything very special.
Thank you. What is your name, please?
Del.
And where do you live?
Hollywood, California.
Have you always lived there?
No.
Do you know any of the Beatles personally?
Yes, all four of them.
And why is that?
I worked for their company, Apple, in London for 2 years.
And were you working there when the news came that people in the United States suspected the death of Paul McCartney?
Yes, I was.
What was the reaction of the Beatles?
There was no reaction at all.
They didn't care?
Only because they couldn't get phone calls out because the switchboards were tied up.
You mean people were calling to find out if it was true?
Yes.
What did Paul have to say about all of this?
Well, I don't know because I didn't speak to him.
You've heard these recorded Phillips that are found in reversing the track and lifting overlays, as the technician described. Do you think they're accidental?
Yes.
Don't the Beatles do things like that when they're making records?
Yes, all the time. They're very technical, but they have a lot of fun while they're recording.
Well, you think none of those phrases was put there deliberately by any of the Beatles?
No.
Do you believe that the words were said as they appear to be said?
I've heard some of the words, and I do believe them, but there are reasons for most of the things that I have heard.
Do you think they're accidents of sound?
No.
They were put there deliberately?
Yes.
Do you know why they were put there?
Well, because the Beatles just record. They don't have any boundaries for recording. You know, whatever comes up at that moment may just go down onto the tape, and it's just in fun. And
are all of their songs that have a hazard in the preparation?
Oh, no, they're done very, very well, but
how long does it take on the average for the Beatles to put together an album, if you know?
Well, the albums that were put together while I was working for them took between 2 and 3 months each. Mm-hmm.
And are you satisfied that the Paul McCartney you met, I guess, about 2 years ago is the same one that was the original Paul McCartney?
Yes.
Well, why is that? You never met the original if he is dead.
Well, I can't answer that question. I just believe
I didn't think
that
so.
Is.
Thank you. Sir, what is your name?
Peter Asher.
And do you know Paul McCartney, Mr. Asher?
Yes, I do. I've known him well for about 5 years.
Are you the brother of Jane Asher?
Yes, I am.
And was she at one time associated with Paul in some way?
Yes, she was, yes.
How well do you know him? Is he a close friend?
Yes, he's a close friend.
Did he at one time live with you, in fact?
Yes, he did. He stayed at my house for a while.
And so you've known a man who calls himself Paul McCartney both before and after November 1966?
Yes, I've known both of them.
You satisfied that he's alive?
Absolutely and completely. There's no doubt whatever that the whole business is fictitious.
I see. Well, conceding that for a moment, do you think that the Beatles have deliberately put a suggestion of death throughout their songs
and
their
albums? No, I don't.
Do you think all of these things that were pointed out by Mr. Labor are pure coincidence?
I think the clues are a mixture of coincidence. They're a mixture of things that are on the records and that if you listen to in a certain way could be interpreted in this light because of the theory. But I don't think that any of them are clues planted in order to suggest that Paul is dead.
By the way, you heard the testimony of Mr. Cannon, who described a tape-recorded conversation he had for, I think, 22 minutes with a man claiming to be Paul McCartney.
Yes, I did.
Have you listened to that tape?
Yes, I have.
Was that, in fact, Paul McCartney?
No, it was not.
Do you accept the explanation that he gave in Life magazine for all of these coincidences?
I see. I mean, I have no reason not to. I myself, of course, don't know the explanation for each of the very many minute clues that these people have concocted. But I do know enough to know that they are certainly not deliberate clues and that the majority of them are in the eye and ear of the beholder rather than in the record.
I see. Is my vision defective or is Paul McCartney wearing a black rose against
the indeed.
Three?
He is indeed.
No question about that.
There is no question about that.
Do you think that was deliberate or accidental?
I have no way of knowing. I wasn't there when they filmed that scene.
You do know, don't you, that black roses don't grow that way. They have to be specially prepared.
Yes, I've been told that.
And Paul McCartney told Life magazine that they just happened to run out of red roses, so he put on a black one. Do you believe that?
Yes, I believe that, yes.
You think there was a black one lying around by accident?
Yes. I doubt if they're real roses, since it's costume. I'm sure they had a black one as well as some red ones.
Isn't it a fact that some claim they weren't wearing any flowers at all? Those were painted on afterwards.
Well, I suppose that's possible as well. They could have done the scene and then decided they'd look better with flowers in their lapels.
If they were painted on afterwards, the use of a black one was certainly deliberate, was it not?
That would be easy to tell, of course, by looking at the film itself, which is available.
How do you explain the fact that on the cover of the Sgt. Pepper album, the only person, and there are many, many depicted, who is shown with a hand held over his head is Paul McCartney?
I think that's a coincidence. I mean, George Harrison's the only one with a large, bearded, bald man above his head. I mean, it's just a... It's just the way the picture came out.
But there are many faces in the picture and only one hand. That's true, isn't it?
Yes, that's true.
All right.
But there's only one of most of the things in this picture.
I see. Turn your attention, if you will, to the album called Abbey Road. You heard the description of Mr. Labour.
Yes.
That the significance of the dress is not to be passed over lightly. Now, Paul
well,
is the only one without
shoes. See,
this
is the point. I do believe that the significance of all these things is to be passed over lightly.
Sure,
the Beatles, when planning a cover, do not decide very carefully what to wear and what significance his not wearing shoes will have. They wear whatever they feel like wearing at the time, whatever they happen to be wearing. They approach things in a far less serious and symbolic way than anyone in this country gives them credit for.
Mr. Asher, knowing as you do something the English styles of today, isn't it
yes.
a fact that that's an out-of-date grey suit?
It is indeed an out-of-date grey suit.
And isn't it a fact that people in England, when they are deceased, are buried without their shoes?
Yeah, but it is worth noting that Paul, for the last few years, has been in the habit of wearing out-of-date grey suits, for which he has an especial affection, and he also frequently doesn't wear shoes.
But we find him elsewhere without shoes, and the shoes are nearby with what appears to be some blood on them. Did you notice that?
I have not seen that, no.
All right. It is in the Magical Mystery album, I believe. Oh, by the way, you find no significance in the walrus?
No, I don't.
You would agree that in Roman and Dutch mythology, the figure of the walrus is connected and suggests death?
I have been told that today, but I didn't know it before, and I very much doubt if Paul knew it before.
I see. Would you examine that and tell me whether or not the only beetle not wearing shoes, once again, is Paul?
Yes, he appears... That's right. He appears not to have shoes on.
And the only pair of shoes without somebody standing in them is next to Paul.
That's true. Well, as I say, he frequently takes his shoes off in the recording studio and elsewhere.
What about the reddish stain on the shoes?
Oh, that could be anything. It could be like a printing thing.
Might be ketchup or red paint.
Yeah, it could be. I think it looks like it's on the photograph to me, not the shoes.
Mr. Rasher,
but either way,
it?
My point is that I know, you know, that I know he's alive. I know the Beatles wouldn't do a thing like this. And it's, if you analyze each clue, you could try to prove almost any theory. And you could say to me, look at that tiny thing there in that album. Can you explain that? Of course I can't. I don't know what everything is in every picture on every album. But I do know he's not dead, and I do know that they're not even trying to suggest that he is.
Well, we've been told by a previous witness that the Beatles are a little bit prankish when they put together an album. Isn't that true?
Prankish in the sense that they're light-hearted. They don't prank in the sense of deliberately planning to deceive, no.
Do you think that the so-called clues, remarks, and other things that are found in these recordings as they're taken apart are all coincidence?
As I've explained, I think most of them are not there. I think some of them are coincidental, like, for example, King Lear on the end of Walrus, which I just read an article that attached great significance to. I know that to be coincidental because I was there. They picked up the radio in the recording studio by mistake, which happened to have a broadcast of King Lear on it, so they put it in the ending because it sounded nice. It's a combination of things like that, things that aren't there, and in some case, maybe someone was saying, oh, my microphone's dead or something, and now you hear, oh, you just
happened to be
hear
picked
the
up.
Yes.
Do you think they could be that sloppy so as to put that accidentally onto a stereo tape?
Not accidentally, in the sense that they know it's there. I mean, there's remarks and
they just don't take it out?
Well, you can't take it out. If you do a take and someone says something during the take and it's the best take, you leave it in.
I see. You do agree that, as Mr. Labour read, after the Walrus picture was out and on the street,
yes,
Paul was described in a song called The Glass Onion as the Walrus.
That's
by
true.
John Lennon, who said, and now I have another clue for you all, the Walrus is Paul. Now, is that an accident?
No, that's the way he wrote the song. It was indeed, right. Yes.
Why did he say another clue?
That
because
was a light-hearted song. The whole song was a collection of their recent works and their titles and a general kind of mishmash. And it is a light-hearted reference to the fact that people do frequently attempt to find clues in their albums.
Oh, I see. And that is the only reason he put that in there?
Yes.
Well, now, Mr. Asher, you claim, of course, that Paul was alive. That may well be so.
I know.
You also claim that the Beatles did not deliberately try to create this myth in order to increase their publicity.
That is what I know to be true, yes.
But it has increased the publicity, hasn't it?
Well, only because all you people have taken it seriously enough to do all this incredible nonsense for an hour.
Yeah.
About something that really is just, you know, not true, and in Paul's own words, is bloody stupid.
Life magazine, too, is guilty of incredible nonsense, is it not?
Yes, they are indeed.
And Time magazine is guilty of incredible nonsense.
Well, you can't blame them any more than one can blame you, because it's news. It's only news because people are stupid enough to want to believe it.
I see. Do you think that it does any good at all for the Beatles to be thus publicized about a very fascinating possibility?
I really don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. If you're probably right. Their record sales have probably increased because of this. But that's
Asher,
certainly something that doesn't concern them. They're not about to embark on some ridiculous publicity thing to try and sell more records. They've sold all the records they ever need to sell.
Yes, I understand. Are you a radio technician?
No.
An audio technician?
I'm familiar with the techniques of recording, yes.
You heard the testimony of an expert that those things on those records had to be deliberately planted and could not be the result of accident. Now, do you still say they were an accident?
You've asked me this question three times as to whether I think they're an accident, and I've explained. Some of them are accidental, some of them are not there, some of them are there, but are not necessarily what they are heard to be.
What about I Buried Paul? Is it there?
It sounds like it is to me, yes. It sounds like John is saying I Buried Paul.
What about Turn Me On, Dead Man?
I couldn't hear that myself.
So you say it is not there?
I couldn't hear it.
What about the description of Paul being dead and the word miss him, miss him, miss him, coming up in reverse?
No, that I couldn't hear.
You don't find that either?
No.
And you are...
Well, listening to this show was the first time I'd heard those things played backwards, and I couldn't hear any of them.
You are, as you have put it, a very close friend of Paul McCartney.
I am.
Well, isn't it a fact that even if you thought he was guilty of a little hoax here, that you wouldn't say so?
Oh, wow. You mean that I'm lying to continue with
No. I'm saying that if you suspected that this might be going on, I don't suggest that you're lying, but that you might be inclined to defend him in any event.
That's probably true, yes. If I really thought he was hoaxing, I'd probably back him up, but I swear to you that he is not, and that I know that he's alive, and that he didn't mean any of this to happen, nor did any of them.
So you say that you're not defending him because you don't have to, but if he were guilty of something, you probably would defend him anyway, and that is the basis on which we must judge your credibility.
No, that's a very unfair ending.
That isn't what you intended. Thank you, sir. What is your name, sir?
Sal Iannucci.
Where do you live?
Los Angeles.
By whom are you employed?
Capitol Records.
Is that the same Capitol Record Company that publishes the Beatles albums?
That's right.
And in what capacity are you employed?
I'm president of Capitol Records.
What do you know about Paul McCartney being dead?
I've heard a lot of talk and I've read about it, but I don't believe it.
Do you approve the artwork in these covers that come out?
Usually.
And have you had explained to your satisfaction all of the rather morbid connotations that our previous witness seems to have found in that artwork?
Well, I never really had any interest in the explanation, so I don't know whether you can conjecture that it's been to my satisfaction.
I see. You find the existence of a black rose on one, but not all of the Beatles, to be of no significance, I take it?
Not in my mind.
Mm-hmm. What has happened to the sale of Beatle records since this wave hit the country, so to speak?
Well, the Abbey record has been selling well, but it was selling well before the actual rumor. It's a very outstanding record, which received a lot of critical acclaim, and based on its own merits, has sold quite a number of records. But it's pretty much typical of the Beatles records in terms of total volume.
Oh, if the Abbey record is new, the others have been on the market for a while, and certainly
That's
before
right.
this storm. Took over. You say that you've had no increase in sales, felt no effect from all of this publicity?
Well, on the two records which have been discussed, the Magical Mystery and the other record, Sergeant Pepper, we've noticed some increase recently in the number of...
A sharp increase?
It would be substantial over what would be expected, but I'm sure that it's caused in part by the discussion and the conjecture as to whether McCart...
Would you, as president of Capitol Records, participate in a hoax of this sort in order to increase sales?
No, I don't think we'd engage in that.
All right. And do you say that none has been perpetrated to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge.
Then we'll perhaps ask a man who knows. Your name, sir?
Alan Klein.
And where do you live?
New York City.
What is your occupation?
I'm the president of Abco Industries. It's a business management company.
Do you represent these Beatles we've been talking about?
Yes, we do.
And for how long have you represented them?
About 9 months.
Are you abreast of their business situations as a rule?
Yes, I am.
Is one of the Beatles that you represent Paul McCartney?
Yes, he is.
And how long have you known him?
Since about January of this year, 69.
You were never introduced to a man claiming to be Paul McCartney prior to November of 1966?
No, I wasn't.
Now, are you responsible to any degree for the manner in which these record albums have been put together?
Just the last one, but not on an artistic basis, if that's what you mean.
Do you agree with Mr. Asher that these are all totally haphazard and there is no purpose or message behind any of the artwork?
I don't think there's a message behind the artwork at all.
Why do you think, then, that...
I'm sorry. That's a quick answer. The Sgt. Pepper album was a concept album which dealt with, in effect, what the Beatles felt they might be like when they were 64 years old. Now, so consequently, you know, you would have the question of age and maybe death.
But don't you agree that Paul McCartney is constantly being singled out? Something is different about him than the rest of the Beatles.
Well, he is different than the rest of them. I think they're all different.
Is it their intent to focus attention on Paul?
No, I would think that each one of them wants as much attention as they could on themselves.
Did you listen to the tape of the phone call to Mr. Cannon that was supposed to be Paul?
Yes, it did.
And was it?
No.
Do you know who it was?
I think I do.
Can you tell us?
I think it's Tony Bramwell, the promotion man.
Why do you think he would make such a call?
I think that you have a lot of people with no authority who make a lot of statements about the Beatles because they're interested in their own self-adornment.
Have you had any discussion with the Beatles since these stories got loose?
Yeah, I was in England last week.
Well, have you questioned them about what some claim are coincidences, these albums?
The only thing I did question John on was the statement, which you can hear playing when you play the record forward, where I buried Paul. And it was a very simple explanation. When you make a recording and you do more than one take, you will have sounds or maybe imperfections on a particular track, and when you go to mix it, you can't lose it. Otherwise, you have to lose the entire track.
And that's quite an imperfection. Do you say it was an accident? I buried Paul.
What he was referring to was the fact that on that particular take, his guitar buried Paul's sound. And that's what he was saying.
And that's his explanation?
Yeah, pure and simple.
But Paul didn't give that to Life magazine when they interviewed him.
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't with Paul when he gave it to Life magazine.
But you've seen the published interview.
Well, I don't know that what they did is quoted him word for word.
All right. Assuming for the moment that the reporter was true to his own statements in republishing them, do you accept Paul's explanation that he wound up with a black rose when the others had red ones just because they happened to run out of red roses?
Sure.
You know how black rose is created?
I don't know that that was an actual rose, and I don't think you do either.
Well, whether it's a rose, a carnation, or any other
flower. Could have been a prop. In other words, an artificial rose.
But Mr. Klein, his statement was that he was going to wear red rose, but they didn't have but three, so he took a black one.
A black artificial rose.
Yes. Now, here's Mr. McCartney with a black rose and all the others with red. Here's Mr. McCartney with bare feet and all the others have shoes on. And this is all accidental?
Yeah.
Not intended by the Beatles to give a suggestion of death that might give rise to these stories?
Absolutely not.
Do you think the Beatles are in any way profiting, according to your knowledge of their finances, from the intense public interest in these albums?
I would tell you this. That if what you are suggesting and what some other medias are suggesting is the truth, they would be harmed a great deal more. And I don't think they don't have to stoop to this. They're not Jane Mansfield. They don't have to stoop to this type of publicity in order to, financially reward themselves.
Well, Mr. Klein, absent any commercial interest in the product of all this publicity, do you think they might be up to just some prankery?
I'll tell you, I think that, quite honestly, this type of press is something that really annoys them. They don't really have to do anything special or specific to get press.
You say they're unhappy with all of this?
I think they were annoyed. In the beginning, I don't think they really cared, but I think Paul got very annoyed with it. He went away on
holiday. Is he still annoyed?
2 weeks ago, he was annoyed.
Do you think he's anxious to have these stories set to rest?
Well, I think he certainly took a giant step. He allowed life to come up there, and he allowed pictures, which were taken, to be exhibited on the front cover. Isn't that substantial enough?
In part, but it is claimed that he is of different height and a different weight than he was several years ago. Have these matters been brought to his attention by you in your conversations?
It becomes a moot point, because there were two real basic questions, and one of the reasons I think we didn't even attempt to answer them was because what was being asked was not, is Paul McCartney dead, but A, is Paul McCartney dead, and B, is there someone taking his place? I would tell you, if we could, or if anyone could come up with someone who could write as well as the second Paul McCartney, I think we've made a very good substitution. But well, I don't think you can...
Mr. Klein, conceding the talent of whoever is now wearing the Paul McCartney suit, so to speak, it would indeed be quite a story if he were replaceable in the manner suggested, would it not?
Well, I think it would be almost as impossible as it would be to, say, substitute fingerprints, because the style of a writer is as indelible as the prints on your finger.
And speaking of fingerprints, what steps has Mr. McCartney taken to compare the prints that he's now wearing on his fingers with the ones which were officially recorded back in the early 60s when he left the country?
Absolutely none. I don't think he has to.
Well, the question then arises as to whether or not the Beatles really want to shut down this publicity and set the stories to rest, or whether or not the sale of albums may be going so well that it would be a bad idea, without suggesting there's anything wrong in such a
attitude. You're imputing to them characteristics which they really don't have.
You say they're not that kind of guy.
That's right.
All right. Then I ask you, why has Paul McCartney not said, okay, look, here's Scotland Yard, they have my prints, here's my fingers, they say I'm the same guy, let's stop the nonsense. He hasn't done that.
If you would guarantee me that every single person who would talk about these particular type of statements would categorically stop and cease and desist, he'd do it. The Beatles' recordings are what they are. And consequently, whatever happens at the time, they're not going to clean up to make it perfect in a form that I think the professional, in quotes, record people would like. The sounds of the Beatles are what they are.
Yes, and no one is quarreling with the quality of the sound.
No, I'm not talking about the quality.
You say that the Beatles have not buried Paul, right?
No, they really haven't. And I think in about the middle of February, you're going to see a motion picture where everyone can go in and judge for themselves.
Isn't it a fact that people in England are buried without any shoes on?
I don't really know.
Is that typical of the suit that Paul McCartney wears as a matter of course?
Yep.
When was that picture taken?
Oh, let's see. Middle of this year.
Hmm. And you say there was no intent, no formulation at all in the attire of any of these men?
I'll tell you something. You know what is really amusing? This album was not supposed to even come out. There was no album, Abbey Road. An album called Get Back, which was the sound from what was supposed to be a television special, was supposed to be the album. And when the picture came out as well as it did, and it was determined that it would be for theatrical release, that particular album was pulled back, and the Beatles went back into the studio and recorded and finished and made that album.
Well, yes, Mr. Klein, but they knew before the picture was taken what they were taking it for, didn't they?
Sure. Yeah. It was a tribute to the album. It was a tribute to the studio.
Do you recognize a 3 in front of the name Beatles in the back of the album made out by those dots?
Yeah, I think Peter Asher, or someone drew it.
But the dots were there before he picked up the pen.
Could I look at it?
Sure.
I wonder if you would do yourself a favor and get the album which was printed in England. That's a terrible Shorepack album. I'd like to help you.
Is that a bad album, Al? Sound?
Is that a bad album?
Cover.
Defect on the cover?
Oh, the defect on the cover, the 3.
Mr. Klein, those circles
I really
are
can't
in the wall.
Judge.
Okay.
I would like to see the artwork. Original.
This, then, is pretty much the case on the death of Paul McCartney. What does it show? It certainly does not show that he's dead. The inferences drawn by the witnesses, because of some very curious statements found and other clues in the record albums that the Beatles produced, do not show the fact of death at all. Indeed, it's almost impossible to conceive that a man of the stature of Paul McCartney could be accidentally killed in the public and not learn of it. On the other hand, our technician witness has said very clearly that those sounds, strange as they are and suggestive as they are, could not have gotten there by accident. And it certainly is no secret to the Beatles that magazines of the stature of Time and Life have seen fit to give important coverage to this whole event, or supposed event. Indeed, not only did Life magazine run a cover story about Paul McCartney, but by coincidence, if you're straining for innuendo, as some people are accused of being, if you hold it up, you find that an automobile is superimposed across his chest and that the top of his head is missing. Odd? Well, we don't think that Life magazine is part of any conspiracy. Are people digging too hard to try to prove something that they only suspect? That's for you to judge. But we might say this. It is perfectly evident that if the Beatles wanted to, they could have, by this time, have completely foreclosed this rumor. And such evidence has not been forthcoming from their end.
Join Dave Garraway on his own hour-long show. Watch Garraway live tomorrow at 10:30. Now stay tuned for The Magnificent Seven, next on the Sunday movie here on New York 9.